Part 2. Kaleidoscope. It is wrong always, everywhere and for everyone, to believe anything upon insufficient evidence. W.K. Clifford. P-88. Principal Point, Solar City, Sanctuary. Dan McCarthy blew air from his lips, trying to keep his cool and bear in mind that his imagination was understandably jumping to far-reaching and as yet unjustified conclusions as it battled to make sense of the barrage of new information coming its way. The thought that the architects had deceived the Smalls in a similar manner to the messengers, but with the added element of a full-on interplanetary relocation, was remarkable and unsettling in itself, but the fear over how Earth and humanity might have fit into the whole thing was almost blood-curdling.
"What kind of disaster did your gods warn you about?" Tara asked the principal. She was managing to retain her composure quite well, perhaps because Dan hadn't yet shared his latent suspicion, and she stepped in only because he was standing awkwardly silent as their host awaited a reply to his initial answer.
"Our world as we knew it was about to be destroyed by a volcanic eruption," the principal said, sighing as he spoke. "The volcano that dominated our sky, Barren Peak, was long thought to be extinct. One day it began to smoke, causing immediate panic, and the gods arrived by nightfall. Our ancestors were resistant to the suggestion, as anyone would be, that their only hope of survival was to abandon their home. The gods stated that they would never forcibly relocate the population, and they stayed for 4 days and 4 nights until our ancestral leaders relented in the face of the volcano's eruption and agreed to relocate. This came only after many deaths, with those in the vicinity of Barren Peak lost to the lava. Further afield, the skies had already turned gray. The sun would be gone for centuries, our gods warned, and death would take any who stayed behind within days."
Dan took a deep breath. "So your ancestors actually experienced the eruption firsthand?" he asked. "They saw it? They felt its effects?"
"They did,"
the principal confirmed. The humans shared some intrigued glances. Although they hadn't telepathically discussed it, Tara and Billy had naturally jumped to the same conclusion as Dan when a familiar story of the architects warning a native population about their planet's air becoming noxious began. The details that emerged in the principal's follow-up, however, were painting a new and surprising picture. To Dan, it was starting to sound as though, this time, the architects might really have been telling the truth. He wondered still whether the planet from which they had rescued the Smalls might have been Earth, and took a few seconds to think of some questions that might shed some light on this without letting his own suspicions be known or raising any new ones in the principal's mind.
"I am surprised this information is new to you," the principal said. "Is it the case that your ancestors, our gods, have not passed it down the generations?"
Although it didn't really confirm anything Dan didn't already know, part of his mind was glad to hear the principal so explicitly and unambiguously state his belief that the human trio's ancestors were indeed the gods who had saved his own kind from a volcanic apocalypse. This removed any possible notion of misinterpretation, an element of which had been present given that, from the beginning of the conversation, it had almost seemed to Dan as though his group and the principal were speaking the same language in a literal sense, but perhaps not always in terms of their implied meanings. "As I said," Dan replied as flatly as his mile-a-minute mind could manage, "a lot of history has been lost to time. Thank you for being patient." The principal shook his head.
"You need never thank me," he smiled. "But tell me, for what reason did you cross the gateway to grace us with your presence today? This world is not in any kind of present danger, is it?"
Dan froze. "What the hell am I supposed to say to that?" he wondered, racking his mind for a way out. He had to get home from Sanctuary. That was all that mattered. But first, he had to come up with some justification for why he had arrived there in the first place. but for all the world, for all the worlds, his mind was coming up blank. What do we say? Billy silently asked the rest of the group, desperate to assist Dan in his moment of need. The silence grew ever more uncomfortable. Leisha's voice then entered Dan's mind, and that of the other two humans, having been quiet for so long that his presence had momentarily been forgotten.
I'm going to uncloak myself. I plead you to trust me on this, but I'll refrain if you wish. Things will be a lot easier if I can talk to him and show the power I possess. The pressure on you, as his presumed gods, will abate. If they think we're their gods, let's show them some power so we can promise more on our next return,
Tara silently replied to all three at once.
He said we can leave, but he didn't exactly sound happy about it, and Leisha is right. If he shows himself, that will take some of the pressure off us at the same time. Besides, if they've broken the small craft with the force they used to bring it down, we're going to need Leisha's teleportation power to get back to the mothership so we can cross the gate. And if they don't know he's here and don't come to trust him, how can we ask them to remove whatever kind of block was stopping him from doing it earlier?
She is right, Leisha added. Even now, I have a certain feeling that I cannot teleport. I do not have to attempt it to know there is a block in place. This may be something related to the force they enacted to reel in our craft, or it may simply be the case that some of my powers do not work on this side of the gate. I cannot get any reading on Sacco's whereabouts on New Kerguelen or Earth, for instance, and we could always communicate across the gate that links those worlds. There seems to be something very different about Sanctuary's gate, and my instinct is sure that our hope of a swift return will require their knowledge of my presence and perhaps their direct assistance.
Dan nodded at no one in particular. Their situation was complicated and their challenges more complex than he had realized moments earlier, but above all else, he knew that time was of the essence. We wanted to test the effects of your planet's gateway on a friend of another race, he announced to the principal, doing so without explicitly clearing this specific approach with his companions, but taking it upon himself to do so and talking with an assured confidence as he did. Through engagement with another race, our lives have been enriched. We have with us a guest from a distant world who goes by the name of Leisha. No one knew quite where Dan was going with this, and they made no secret of this as they sent silent but firm questions his way on that very subject. These thoughts were exchanged rapidly, far more quickly than would have been the case were they spoken aloud, and the principal gazed at Dan in amazement, while the others gazed at him in confusion. Will you react calmly to the presence of our friend? Dan asked, taking care to use the word presence rather than arrival or appearance. He also made a point of looking at Depp after asking the principal, keen to receive explicit confirmation from each. When it came, he gave the order. Leisha, it's time.